broadcasting worldwide.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everyone, to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. This is a show dedicated to helping you learn how to emulate the American dream and to build wealth. We'll be talking about taxes, legal strategies, asset protection, all these topics and how they come together. That's what the show is about. And I am joined, as always, with my amazing co-host and partner. He's an attorney, a CPA, a surfer, a scoutmaster, a family man, and a good cuddler, from what I've heard from his wife, the amazing Mark J. Kohler.
Wow. Thank you, Matt. I haven't heard a good cuddler. That's a pretty amazing introduction. And, you know, I do appreciate you pointing out surfer. Some of you may have seen some of the footage of some pro surfers getting attacked by sharks this week during a surf contest, which, you know, that's a pro athlete for you. I'd like to see some of those guys up on the mound pitching a baseball, have a shark come out of nowhere trying to attack them while they're, you know, making the pitch from the mound. So I think surfing that takes it to a whole new level. I just want to throw that out. Just a quick comment on that.
Yeah, they're not just all a bunch of pot smoking hippies, right? They're athletes.
There you go. If you can fight off a shark, that's a lot more than just, pot smoking hippie. Yeah, you got to be able to fight a shark off. I like that. Thanks, Matt. That's a good one.
We want to let you know there's a lot of ways to listen to the show. You can find us on the podcast on iTunes under Refresh Your Wealth. You can listen to us via the BizTalk Radio app or biztalkradio.com. We're syndicated on 13 AM stations nationwide. However you're listening, thanks for being with us today. We've got an exciting topic, Mark.
Oh, yeah. This is going to be a good one. And we're going to the nuts and bolts today. I think any of you even driving down the road catching this on an AM station, you're going to want to pull over, take some notes, or again, get back to iTunes and listen to the recording. We're going to talk about S corporations. That's S as in small. It's a huge strategy for the small business owner. And not everybody needs an S corp, but wow, a lot of small business owners around the country are not using them, and it's costing them thousands. So we're going to talk about when, where, why, and how the S corp might help you in your business. We're going to come to that as we get closer to the bottom of the hour, but I think this is stuff that the average small business owner needs to know. And I guess, Matt, it kind of relates to the article you wrote in our newsletter this week too.
Yeah, you know, the article in the newsletter today that's on my blog, by the way, you can find our newsletter at refreshyourwealth.com. You can get access to Mark and my blogs from that site. But I wrote about how to get $50,000 from your own 401k. And one of the common things you can do in accessing $50,000 from your 401k is you can start up a small business. And that is a excellent way, I think, to fund a business, to get access to capital to start up a business and to cover startup expenses, is accessing your own 401k. You can get up to $50,000 from your 401k. The rule is you can take half the balance of your 401k, not to exceed $50,000. So if you had $200,000 in your 401k, and let's say you're at a day job and you want to start a small business on the side, you could get up to $50,000 from the 401k. If you had $80,000, you can get $40,000. Half the balance, not to exceed $50,000. You have to pay it back to the 401k in 5 years. But that $50K can be used for a lot of things, Mark. It could be used to pay off high interest debt that you may be paying 18% on a credit card. By the way, the interest rate is only 4.25% when paying it back to your own 401k.
Yeah, and I love this because how it relates to an S corporation is if some of you have left that day job and you have an old 401k languishing in a kind of an IRA free zone, you might want to set up that S corporation, create your own 401k, roll that old IRA into your 401k, and then borrow against it. Because you can't borrow from your IRA, but you can borrow from a 401k. So again, all these things start to open up when you get into that S corporation world, which we love. Okay, so we're going to be talking about that later in the show. But as always, every week we have a tax and legal tip. And this week we're going to start with our legal tip.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. Well, I don't want to take a shower after this legal tip, and we've got an honest Abe lawyer on with us today. We've got Lee Chen working out of our California office, going to court on a regular basis. Heck, he was even doing depositions here in the office yesterday. I was on lockdown. I couldn't say anything around here because everybody was, you know, depositions are going on. And so this is a real lawyer. We love to have him on the show on a regular basis. Lee, welcome.
Thank you, Mark and Matt. It's great to be on the show again.
All right, thanks, Lee. You got a tip for us today?
I do, actually. And it's something that maybe a lot of people don't think of when they do set up their LLC or their S-Corp. A lot of people think that, you know, just setting up your LLC or your corporation, and that's fine. My assets will be protected. But that's not where it ends. And I just wanted to talk about a couple tips in terms of maintaining your entity so that you are preserving what we call the corporate veil.
Ooh, good point. This is, you know, once you get the company, you got to take some extra steps here. What's important for people to know once they have the company set up on how to protect that?
Well, here's how this can come back to bite you. Is I have a case now where a creditor, it was a landlord, sued an LLC that was set up, but the landlord went that extra step and named both of the partners individually, and they're going after them personally to try to pierce the corporate veil. And so the issue comes up in the litigation. Well, were you properly maintaining? And all of these documents that we will talk about in a second, we're trying to scramble to see if there's documents available for this to protect them from this personal liability.
Well, Lee, I love this, and I remember you talking to me about around the water cooler on this one, because I think it related to those depositions yesterday, because some people think, oh, I set up my LLC on whatever website, I don't want to say, and I, you know, click of a mouse, and then I've got this one sheet of paper, so my LLC's done. No, 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 folks. You need those operating agreements and organizational minutes and annual minutes and where's your corporate book. And everybody, I know some of you listening right now are like, Mark, you don't have to have those with an LLC. All right, go ahead. Play that game. You show up in depositions with one sheet of paper. Lee, how's that going to serve them?
That was one of our arguments yesterday, is trying to say that it's an LLC, we don't need it. But let me tell you, when the opposing counsel is asking you for this, would you rather say, well, the law doesn't require me to do it, or would you rather give them a stack of paper saying, boom, here's all my minutes?
No, I think this is powerful. And in a good partnership LLC situation, you want to be doing those minutes and having those regular meetings. And it's a great tax write-off opportunity. Hey, I'm just going to say it right now. Matt, what do we have scheduled this weekend, huh? Come on.
Yeah, we got to have an annual meeting in Las Vegas to discuss business topics. I mean, and the business needs to pay for that.
Absolutely. So I'm having a business meeting with my partner, Matt Sorensen, in Vegas this weekend. I'm not going to tell you what's going to happen, but I will say this. We're going to take some minutes, and it's going to be in writing. Good stuff.
Yeah. So the other quick thing I wanted to say is, you know, it's great to have an operating agreement. You want to follow the operating agreement, okay? You don't sign that as an agreement with your partners or with your corporation or LLC for nothing. There's rules in there that if you're not following it and you get into a litigation, they're going to use that to say you're not really treating this as a corporation.
Well, I love this, Lee. I think more and more people should take the maintenance of their entity seriously. At our law firm, we've been helping clients maintain their entities for $150 a year, do their minutes, keep it on track. We have a little company maintenance program. I know many of you use your lawyer or accountant to do that. That's fine. Find someone and get it done. We literally have a paralegal at our office, Matt. I mean, it's kind of funny. We call her the cleanup girl. Literally, all she does all day long is clean up entities set up online that are jacked up.
I couldn't agree more, Mark.
All right. Well, thanks, Lee, for being with us and for the legal tip. We're going to move over to our tax tip now.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
Oh, I love that Refresh Your Wealth sound. And today we've got the infamous Liddell Ayer, the hunter, the partner at K&E CPAs. I know he's getting ready for the fall hunts. He can smell it in the air. This guy, well, you're watching football games. He's out tracking down some wild beasts in the great outdoors. We love this guy. Liddell, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. It's good to be on. Yeah, it is. Fall is in the air a little bit here in Utah, so it is getting there.
I love it. Well, we're going to come back after the break with our tax tip. Liddell, tell us the topic so we know what we're going to talk about.
I'm going to talk about 0% tax.
You sold me. I'm on board.
Intriguing. Come back after the break. You're listening to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. Welcome back, everyone. This is the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. Thanks for being with you today. We were diving into a tax tip, and Liddell Ayer is with us here. He was about to tell us about how to get zero taxes.
Well, what I want to talk about today is paying 0% federal tax. Now, everybody would love to do that in one of the two cases I'm going to talk about. There's only two ways to pay zero tax that I know of. One is don't make any money and you won't pay any tax. That's a 0% tax. The second one has to do with capital gains. Long-term capital gains at a certain amount, you pay 0% tax on capital gains.
I love it. This is a great conversational point because I guess people that want to maybe sell out of a rental property, sell out of some investments. Liddell, I know I get a common question on this too. What about your regular income versus the income you're going to experience from the sale of this asset? How do those play out together in determining if you have 0% tax?
Well, what it does is you look at the combination of the ordinary income versus the capital gain income, and whether you're single or married. Now, a married couple filing jointly can have up to $74,900 of taxable income in 2015, and it'll play into the combination of that. So you could have $50,000 of that $74,900 as capital gains with the other $24,900 as ordinary. Well, you're only going to pay tax on the $24,900 of ordinary. That $50,000 of capital gains would be at a 0% tax. So if your other income is going to play into it, but it's just a matter of where it falls out, and with some planning, you can actually make that work to your benefit.
Okay, so I'm going to take the reverse and say, if I had, let's just say, $75,000 of ordinary income and then sold a property and had $100,000 of income, capital gain, I'm not going to get 0% because I already used up my 75 per se. I'm already over the threshold. So it's a combination
Correct.
Of the two. Okay. All right. So it's a combination of the two.
It's the combination of the two. And if your ordinary is already eating up that 75, then you're going to pay capital gains rate at possibly 15, maybe 20%.
You know, what I like about you bringing up this topic, Liddell, is that it really opens the door to other strategies, like thinking of a Roth IRA or a Roth 401k, doing a 1031 exchange. And one that I think is interesting is, Matt, you're working on an article right now of maybe moving even to a state where your state income tax could be exempt, even for just even your retirement income. So, I mean, if you really think about these strategies that Liddell's bringing up, you could get creative with some state planning too.
Yeah, I did have a blog article recently go up about the different states where you have no state income tax if you're living off of retirement plan distributions. You know, a lot of retirees move to Florida for the sun and fun. A lot of them move there also so they don't have to pay taxes on their retirement plan distributions. And there's a lot of other states where you get that same treatment, and it's not just the no income tax states. There's a few other states that have specific exemptions just for retirement plan distributions to frankly encourage retirees there. So another no tax scenario, even though you may be making some money or having some income that could otherwise be taxable in other situations.
Yeah, and we're on a tight schedule on the show, but I'm going to say this right now, and I love you, Liddell, and I'm so glad you brought this up, and I'm going to tell people this right now. You may be catching the show later in the after the summer, and you're listening to it on podcast, but in the summer and fall is when tax planning takes place, folks. If you're sitting here driving down the road listening to this podcast going, you know, I really should talk to my accountant about this more. If you don't have an accountant that's talking about 0% this and combine this income here and what about your state income and your retirement income and just having a planning session for just an hour once or twice a year, folks, you're leaving money on the table. So give Liddell a call, make an appointment, get a refreshing look at your tax plan. I love it, Liddell. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate it. Folks, if you need to get a hold of Liddell, you can email Matt or I. We'll send you his contact information, get you an appointment with his assistant. But Liddell, thanks for being with us. This is good stuff.
It's good to be on. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks, Liddell. And we're going to go over our question of the week. As you regular listeners may know, we've started adding in a question of the week. So I'm going to go over last week's question and read the answer from our winner. The question from last week is, can an agreement made by an email exchange constitute a binding contract? Now, Mike Lilo wrote in with the answer and said, I want to just point this out, everyone. He referenced a very authoritative article on the subject. It can be found at markjkohler.com, and it was called Handshake Email Deals Destroy Business. So, you know, he went to a very reliable source here.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate that shout out.
Now, here was his answer. Mike wrote in, emails can be considered binding in court. So my answer is yes. An agreement by email exchange can create a binding in contract. Unfortunately, not all proper details in an agreement are necessarily stated or worked out in emails, which can lead to bigger legal issues in the long run. Getting a properly negotiated and executed contract in place is always the smart move. Thanks for that great answer, Mike. He is from Howard Beach, New York. I don't know the beaches in New York, but I'm sure it's beautiful. We will be sending you a signed copy of Mark's book, as you requested. I want to note for everyone and for my own self-preservation here, he already has a copy of my book. So Mark's like winning 3-0 on me on book requests on the show here. But that's okay. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's okay. And he's already got a copy of your book. And I think he ought to send that in. I'll have Matt sign my book for you, Mike. But I want to say thanks for responding to that. And this is we've got this week's question. So let me throw out this week's question. And we're going to be getting into our topic for the day here shortly. But the question for this week, and again, I want to challenge all of you listeners out there. You always think, oh, I'm not going to reply. Someone else is doing it. Hey, we don't get as many responses as you may think, and we've got thousands and thousands of listeners. So please reply. So here's the question. The question is, what is the simplified method to take the home office deduction? And you can just respond in one or two sentences. It's really simple. The IRS 2 years ago actually promulgated and sent out a simplified method so small business owners could actually take more and better advantage of the home office deduction. And we want all of our clients taking that write-off. So the question is, what is that simple method? How would you calculate it? Folks, it's an easier answer than you may think. Do a little research on Google. Send in a response to Matt@kkoslawyers.com or Mark@kkoslawyers.com. And don't forget, it's Matt with one T. And I think we're going to have a great response.
All right. Yeah, well, we're looking forward to the answers to that question. Thanks for those who do participate in the answers. We always like receiving answers to these questions and seeing that we're, you know, stimulating your mind. Well, let's jump into our topic here briefly and start talking about S corporations. This is an awesome topic. I use an S corporation. I mean, S corporations are one of the most common businesses used by business owners, whether you're a dentist, a real estate broker, a restaurant owner, a salesperson, 1099. I don't care what you are. If you're in the small business world, you need to know about S corporations. Great tax saving strategy. We're going to come back, dive into the details on it, some of the tax benefits and perks of having an S corporation, why are people using it, and how you could set one up for your business. You're listening to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Welcome back, everybody, to Refresh Your Wealth with Mark Kohler, can't even say my own name, and Matt Sorensen. Excited to be here with you today. I think I'm just excited about the topic. That's the problem. I'm all hot and bothered over here. We're going to be talking about S corporations. Now, let me explain first, when you would use an S corporation. We've got a lot of questions that came in from fans across the country. We're going to hit those here as we get through the topic. But this is a big topic and big strategy. So please be patient as we hit the highlights here. And I think many of you, if you're not already using an S corp, are going to want to consult with a professional to make sure to see if it's a good fit for you. So Matt, here's my first point that I like to bring up is that when do I need an S corp? And that's when you're generating ordinary income. S corporations are for ordinary income, not passive income. So let me give an example. A classic example is a realtor. A realtor is getting a 1099, they're a small business owner, it's ordinary income, and a realtor is generating this ordinary income that's subject to self-employment tax, and they're getting killed, 15.3% on all the net income they're making. Now, but the realtor also has a rental property down the street, okay? Well, that rental property is passive income. We would not want, that's not a problem. It's not subject to self-employment tax, and we would never want to put rental property in an S corporation. But the S corporation is for operational income. So the dentist is an S corporation, but his building is held by the LLC or the passive income. We're going to dedicate a show to our LLC listeners here in the next few weeks too. But the S corp is for the dentist, the LLC for the rental, the S corp for the realtor, the contractor, the architect, the consultant, the salesman. I'm doing marketing sales. I'm doing internet sales. That is for the S corporation. The rental property and the investments go in the LLC. So I think that's the first thing that a lot of people don't realize is that the S corp is really dependent on the type of income you're generating.
Yeah, and I think if you have a business selling goods or services, think S corp. I like how you separate out investments, rentals. Think LLC, that's passive. And the big difference, Mark, you said, I think it was self-employment tax. Now, what is the S corporation? Why do I want the S corporation? Because I have self-employment tax. What's the benefit of running that type of income through the S corporation?
Well, this is the beauty, is that you're able to, and I'm going to use a big word here, bifurcate. Such a cool word. But I can take my S corporation and bifurcate the income. And what that means is I can take part of my S corp income and pay myself a salary or a W-2, and then the bulk of the income, the majority of the income, and that's the trick, flows through the bottom as net income, or let's just call it a dividend to make sense of it. So when you funnel money into your S corp business, you take part salary and part dividend, and then you don't pay FICA, the F word, self-employment tax, on the dividend or that pass-through income, which is huge. And that's where the savings is. So if I can run a third of my income through payroll and two-thirds of my income as dividend, I just save 15% in tax on two-thirds of my income. Folks, you do the math. That's huge.
Yeah, every $10,000 you can pay over into the dividend, you're saving $1,500 in taxes. That is huge. So I really like that summary, and I love, you know, this strategy of using the S corporation. I think I said it earlier, I use it myself. I save thousands by using this every year. And I think another way to think about it this way is when you think about as a business owner using an S corporation, you get to pay yourself two things. One, you get to pay yourself as an employee. And that's where you're paying self-employment tax because you're an employee. You got to pay that. And so that self-employment tax is Medicare and Social Security taxes. But you're also the owner of the business. So you get to take out the profits from the business. Now, that profit income gets taxed separately. It's not subject to the self-employment tax, and that's where the tax savings are sweet. Now, you can't do this in a sole proprietorship or an LLC, can you, Mark? I mean, if I have a sole proprietorship or an LLC, I'm not going to be able to do this.
That's right. You can only do the salary net income split or salary dividend split if you have an S corporation. Now, I know some of you out there are, have got an LLC, and I know this was one of the questions for later, Matt, but I'm just going to feel it right now. Tom emailed in and said, well, hold it. I have an LLC taxed as an S corp. Is that a problem? And the answer is no. You can have an LLC taxed as an S corp, but just remember, you have an S corp. That's not an LLC for holding rentals. So it kind of, you keep that in mind.
Yeah, now when you have an S corporation, there's a number of things you want to make sure you're doing to maintain it. So as Lee's tip was earlier, you know, once you set up one of these corporations, you got to follow through with it. If you want to get these tax savings, you need to take some steps here. So the first thing to think about once you have an S corporation is you need to be doing quarterly payroll. You're going to have an annual tax return, and you're going to want to keep the entity active with the state. Now, on quarterly payroll, that's a minimum. You may be doing monthly, but you're typically going to do a quarterly payroll as a self-employed business owner. And that quarterly payroll, you're going to take the portion of income you're making that you want to claim as salary. And again, that's where the savings are going to come in, Mark, right? I mean, this is where you're making the savings.
Yeah, and for those of you that are listening now that are a real estate developer, an internet marketer, small business owner, consultant, again, dentist, whatever, one of the big strategies here is, what is your salary level right now? Is it too high or too low? So years ago, I created what has been taking the country by storm in my new book, The Tax and Legal Playbook, is what's called the Kohler Payroll Matrix. This thing is crazy. It's an easy and simple way to determine if you're taking too much payroll. And every year, I go to all the boring conferences. I do this for you, folks. I go to these boring CPA conferences. I want to shoot myself in the head at the end of these conferences, but I do it for you, my listener, so that I can learn what are the tricks here on payroll. Because there's bozos out there taking way too much payroll and too little payroll. Finding the balance is where the savings is at. And this is a big deal.
Yeah, because the legal standard is this, that the payroll must be reasonable. You know, I've had some clients ask, well, can I just pay myself like $5,000 then? You know, and they're making six figures in terms of income. No, you got to be reasonable here. You know, a guiding line would be one-third salary, two-third payroll. That'd be, you know, most aggressive you may want to get unless you're consulting with your accountant or attorney on this. But really critical, that's where the savings are, is as you're doing payroll, because the rest of the money you're making that you're not putting through payroll is where the tax savings are, because you're not going to pay self-employment tax on that. Now, Mark, you also have to file an annual tax return for the S-corporation. Not too big of a deal, but there are some benefits to having a tax return for the S-corp.
Oh my gosh, this is where it gets cool too. Do you know, people, that the S-corporation is 15 times less likely to get audited than a Schedule C. That's a 1,500% less chance of an audit. So for folks, if you want to just keep getting killed with self-employment tax, bend over, just do the Schedule C, and you're just going to get hosed, and your chances of an audit go through the roof. But when you make the conversion to the S corporation, you're going to be saving that FICA on maybe half, two-thirds of your income. And then once you follow the matrix, you want to make sure you're on the right schedule for payroll. That's where the savings is. And so I'm going to say this too. There are ongoing costs. I like what Matt said. There's quarterly payroll, an annual tax return. You got to maintain the entity. I tell most clients around the country, you're going to be at a minimum spending $1,500 a year to maintain the S corp. So let's make sure we're saving at least $1,500. So I know, Matt, we talk about around $30,000, $40,000 in net income. You're going to break even on the savings versus the cost.
Yeah, so that's net income after all your expenses. Once you're at 30, 40, that's when you're putting money in your pocket. And everything on top of that is just total tax savings. So great strategy, great tax benefits to using the S corp. I did want to point out a question here that came in, though, Mark, and jump in on what if I am a licensed professional? There's a question here from Melanie that said, what if I'm a licensed professional? I've heard I need to use what's called a PC for a corporation. Can I use that and have an S corporation?
Yes, that's a great question. I was just working with a consultant this week across the country that was setting up his consulting business and then leaving the country and creating income on and offshore. And we're still setting up an S-Corp for him. And we chose to go with an Inc., INC, rather than a PC. Both could be taxed as an S-Corp. The professional corp are for those that are licensed professionals where they want to incorporate their name. And then they're the primary owner and the only licensed owner of the company. If you go with an Inc., Green Tree Group Inc., then you can have non-licensed owners. And really, don't stress about it, folks. The PC is set up for those licensed individuals around the country that want to get that particular type of asset protection that goes with a professionally licensed individual. But you still make the S election. You still become the S corporation, and it really pays off.
Yeah, and I think there's some varieties from state to state. And keep in mind, when you're setting up an S corporation, it's two parts. One, you're setting up a corporation with the state, and then two, you're electing to be taxed as an S corporation. So that's a critical part. When you set up the company, you have to request to be taxed as an S corporation. You don't just automatically get that. We're going to talk about the C corporation and why you want to avoid that here after the break, because that's the default is the C corporation. Don't do it. Don't fall into the C corp trap. We'll talk about that after the break. You're listening to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Welcome back, everyone, to Refresh Your Wealth with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. We're talking about the S Corporation today, and I love right before the break, Matt brought up one of the big, I guess, red flags or pits you can fall into, kind of the minefield of incorporating, is the C Corporation. Now, I know there's some of you listening out there that are like, how can you dare say the C Corporation's bad? Or someone listening is like, I'm a C Corp. I had a consult with a client this week. I've been a C Corp for years. Okay, fine. All right, that's cool. Here's the concern, everybody. Let me just say this right off the bat. With a C Corporation, you still have to take a salary. And then on your net income, you have to pay corporate tax before you take a draw, before you take a dividend. Before you get to take any of that extra profit, you've got to pay C Corp tax. Now, one of the big selling points out there is people say, oh, you need a C-Corp because they're better protection. Wrong. The state of Illinois, the state of California, the state of Florida, they do not care if you're an S or C-Corp when you go into court. Maintaining your entity, like Lee Chen talked about at the beginning of the show, is all about asset protection. This is a tax issue, so don't fall into that trap. And then they may say, well, the C-Corporation gives you more write-offs. Be careful with that. Almost every deduction, there's a way to write it off in the S-Corp. There's only a couple variances where the C-Corp might, and I repeat, might give you an extra write-off. But watch out. I even have an appendix dedicated in my book, the Tax and Legal Playbook, where I break down the C-Corp versus S-Corp, and 95, 98, 99% of the time, the C-Corp is a bust. Folks, if you're in a C-Corp, get a second opinion of where you're at and what a S-Corp would do for you. And number two, folks, if you're getting sold a C-Corporation, watch out. And heaven forbid they try to incorporate you in Nevada or Delaware or some crap like that, some state you're not even located. Folks, be careful. And this is a scam. This is a plague on the nation. And I've been out there for years telling everybody to watch out for these Nevada companies setting you up in Nevada. Get a second opinion. They're overcharging you. They're ripping you off. And, oh, Matt, I can't stop here. Help me. Stop.
As you can tell, this one hits home. You cannot imagine how many clients will come into our office or talk to us on the phone and will be in tears about the money they spent on setting up a corporation or C corporation in Nevada when they had no business of being there. They're overpaying on taxes. They're paying into a state they never use it in. It's a nightmare, and it's really something that's sad of what's happened in the setting up your entity online business world. But let me jump over here briefly. We're going to go over some reviews we've had on
iTunes.
Let's do a
positive note.
Let's switch gears and make some positives here. As you know, on this show, if you've been listening to the show, we love getting 5-star reviews on iTunes. You can go to our podcast on iTunes, search under Refresh Your Wealth. Give us a 5-star review there. It's pretty easy to do. We had over 65 5-star reviews. We've only been on this new podcast for a few weeks, so it's awesome, the response we've gotten. We really appreciate it. We want to read one of those that came in from last week. This was from D. Dodart, who says, Matt and Mark's programs are awesome, always informative information and tips. I've listened for years, so it's so convenient to tune in. No one else, as far as I know, provides this kind of useful information about taxes, business, and preserving wealth. And it's free. Thanks, Mark and Matt. And we're going to go ahead and send a free book out to D. Dodart for writing that review. We want to encourage you who do write a review, and once we can figure out who you are, we will try and get you, we'll pick one each week to get you a signed copy of Mine or Mark's book.
Yes, and folks, here's the trick. When you do that five-star review, just copy and paste it in a quick email to Matt@kkoslawyers.com or Mark@kkoslawyers.com. Send us a quick little note and say, hey, I left you a five-star review, and copy and paste it, because we don't know how to contact you with your cute and sexy handle on iTunes. So you have to send us an email. Now, we know. I'm going to just give him a shout-out. We love Dave Dodart. He's been a great follower and client of ours for years. So we know D. Dodart and his handle. So, Dave, you got a book coming in the mail. But this week, folks, when you leave that five-star review, it only takes a minute. Copy and paste it into an email, and we'll send you a complimentary copy of our book, which on Amazon could range anywhere from $10 to $20 in hardback or soft. This is a great value. So please take the time. We really appreciate it.
All right. Now let's just jump back into the S corporation topic here. We just talked about why you would not do a C corporation. I had another question come in, Mark, about using a DBA with your corporation, and this was from Dr. Emberlin, who asked, I had set up a DBA for my business, and the question was about, do I need to amend the underlying documents? They still have the same prior name on the underlying corporation documents.
Well, this is a great question, and frankly, you could skin the cat two or three different ways. A lot of folks will keep a very generic S corporation name. I'm Mark J. Kohler Inc. And I could set up multiple DBAs, Mark J. Kohler Lemonade and Mark J. Kohler Drywall and all this stuff, all owned by my S corporation. So your S corporation can own multiple DBAs. But if in the long run, it's all one business, all one DBA, it's probably best to just amend your S corporation, change the name to the DBA you've been using. That way you're not paying for two things you don't need. Consolidate it into one. So you have a couple options there, but it depends on your situation. A lot of times we just say amend your S-Corp and move the DBA into your S-Corp name. Now, Matt, one question I just saw here too about the S-Corp was, Mark, I've hesitated for years. This is from Susan out in Illinois. She says, Mark, I've held back doing an S-Corp for years because I'm just scared of the paperwork and how complex it would be. Is it really that bad? Please help. Matt, what's your take on that?
Yeah, it's not bad. The S corporation is really simple to pull off. I think a lot of people, they think, oh, I've got to figure out what's the payroll, how much is the salary, how do I take payroll? It's easy. You take money whenever you want. You have the company bank account, you transfer money to your personal bank account. All you need to do is do a record at the end of the quarter, say what the portion of you take you want to designate as salary, and that goes on the payroll report. You pay your self-employment tax on that. The other money is the money you just save self-employment tax on. So it's well worth it. You'll save plenty of taxes by using the S corporation. Great strategy, as we mentioned. This is an entity used by many business owners.
Yeah, this is the way to go for any of you out there making more than $50,000 a year with ordinary income. And I just want to say thanks for listening. We really appreciate you, the listeners out there, taking heart to this important topic. So please catch us next week for another episode of the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. And keep living the American dream.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.